Over these last few weeks, we've been talking about how some of us have fallen into the trap of social distancing and staying at home emotionally as well as physically. I mean, we're supposed to stay at home and separate and quarantine and all this stuff that we've been doing for the last year now physically, but I think sometimes we've taken that a step further than we should have. And we started isolating ourselves and started emotionally and socially distancing ourselves emotionally and relationally as well. We're closing down emotionally. And so I think as Christians, we need to reiterate how we are called to be together in fellowship with one another. We are an integral part of each other's lives. We are called to be one body of believers. There are many commands in the Bible that tell us how we need to work together and work with one another and to love one another. And I've called these the one another commands because it's a command that says, do this to one another, do that to one another. And I think we've drifted away from them, but sometimes because we are being shut down. And so I started a series a couple weeks ago about these one another commands in the Bible. And again, if you have missed any of those messages, you can listen to them online. They're on Facebook. They're on a website, although our website was shut down for some reason this last week, so I didn't get last week's sermon on there, so it's still on Facebook, though. We looked at two commands so far. We looked at the command, do not lie or deceive one another, and be at peace or live in harmony with one another. These are two commands we looked at so far. And I think they're very important to the aspect of fellowship. But there's another step further I think we need to take this because there's another aspect, an important aspect to look at to improve our fellowship. And it's about grumbling. And when I think of grumbling, I think about this song that I found on the internet this last week. Listen to it, please.
But holy folks don't grumble, they rather praise than pray. Oh, they grumble on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, grumble on Thursday too. Grumble on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, grumble the whole week through. Oh, they grumble on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, grumble on Thursday too. Grumble on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, grumble the whole week through.
This morning we're going to look at the command, do not grumble with one another. Because grumbling is a problem that many of us face in our Christian walk. And it's a hindrance to true fellowship in similar ways that lying and disharmony is that we saw in the last 2 weeks. So we're going to look at this morning some of the causes behind grumbling and how to get rid of it in several ways. So first of all, let's talk about not to grumble with one another. Okay? The first time is the lack of patience from James chapter 5. One of the reasons why we grumble is because we're impatient with others and sometimes with ourselves, if we want to be truthful. I've tried to come up with words I tried to come up with different words starting with the word S, you know, because I had the outline there, lack of S, lack of P. And I couldn't have come up with another word for patience, so I just came with patience. I'm sometimes can coordinate there with all the same letters, but our outline this morning has a P word in it, I guess, instead of an S word. I guess you could go, grumbling is psst, I guess. But anyway, when I think about grumbling, I think about that song, and I learned it as a boy, and always when I think of grumbling, that's the song, I grumble Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and it goes on. But I also thought this last week of some other people that I remember growing up that grumbled a lot, and that's these characters here. Remember these characters from The Muppet Show? Always grumbling. And actually, I found out this week, they actually have names. Their names are actually Statler and Waroff. So, these guys always complained, didn't they? Were always complaining, never on a good mood, grumbling, never had something good to say, always a bitter word on their tongue. And again, that idea of having bitterness in their mouth and in tongue is coming back to James, because we're talking from James this morning, where this command is found. And we see in the book of James talks a lot about the tongue. Talks about a lot about our words, how we need to control the tongue, that the tongue is a restless evil, that we need to tame it, all about our tongue and grumbling. But it says here in James chapter 5, verse 9, the command, don't grumble against each other, brothers, or you will be judged. The judge is standing at the door. Wow, that is a powerful verse, isn't it? I mean, grumbling is wrong. I mean, he has lots to say about grumbling just in this one verse. Versus the command, do not grumble, right? Do not complain, do not murder, do not talk behind people's backs type of thing. That's straightforward enough, right? Don't grumble against each other. Grumbling is wrong, not to be tolerated, it's bad. But then James goes on to say, you will be judged. Now, this is the only time in the Bible, actually, where it says, you're going to be judged, except for when it says in Matthew, judge not lest ye be judged type of thing. So this is a command to be, that's very judgmental, condemning, punishment type of thing. You will be judged. This phrase is used of judgmental people, like I said, from Jesus, lest you be judged. But I think James, as he often does in his letters, is remembering back when Jesus said that. Because he was around when Jesus said that. He remembers James was the brother of Jesus, and he might have remembered Jesus saying, hey, don't judge people, or you'll be judged. And so he says, hey, don't grumble, or judgment's coming. And then right after this command not to grumble, and this consequence of breaking it, you'll be judged, he gives a further warning, right? It says, the judge is standing at the door, right? The judge is right there. The breaking this command will bring swift judgment. It is close. It is right around the corner. Be careful about this. Don't grumble. Now, what's so bad about grumbling, you might think? Why is James giving this such a treatment in this verse? I mean, there are many other commands in the book of James. James is full of commands. Do this and don't do that and do this. And he says, don't grumble. You're going to be judged. You know, and the judge is right there. Why grumbling? Why is it such an explicit warning and judgment here? Well, James doesn't tell us, really, in this verse, doesn't he? He doesn't really tell us in this verse, except for maybe one word that kind of gives us a hint. Brothers. He says, don't grumble against each other, brothers. Now, brothers is a common term in James. It uses 15 times here in this book. The term brothers or one another or fellow believers. He says, hey, don't grumble against each other, brothers. Why? Why? Because he sees us as a fellowship, as a body of believers, as a family. He says, hey, this is just so destructive when you're part of a family. This is so interruptive when you grumble. It just disrupts everything. That small word, brothers, gives us a descriptive more than any other that this is a sin, that this is something that causes division, that causes breakdown in the fellowship. And knowing what James says in his book about controlling their tongue, we might think that this command here to not to grumble might be in those contexts, right? You might think, hey, he talks about the tongue, he talks about the evil of the tongue and trying to control our tongue. It's like a burning flame and like a ship with a rudder, you know, all those types of things that talks about that. But surprisingly, this verse is not anywhere close to those verses in James. In fact, if you looked at the context of this verse, it has nothing to do with our tongue. Let me read you a few verses surrounding it. The two verses before and the two verses after this verse in chapter, verse 9. It says in James 5:7, be patient then, brothers, until the Lord's coming. See how the farmer waits for the land to yield its valuable crop and how patient it is for the autumn and spring rains. You too, be patient and stand firm because the Lord's coming is near. Do not grumble. That's the next line. Okay? He's talking about patience here. Let's read the verse after. James 10 and 11. It says, brothers, as an example of grumbling, patience, in the face of suffering, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord. As you know, we consider blessed those who have persevered. You have heard of Job's perseverance and have seen what the Lord finally brought about. The Lord is full of compassion and mercy. And this caused me to scratch my head many times this last week because this context around this verse, do not grumble against each other, is in the context of having patience with one another and being patient. The first verse before this is talking about how the second coming of Jesus is coming and that you need to wait upon him. Be patient, he says, twice commands right there. Twice he commands, be patient with one another. He's coming back soon, so we need to wait patiently for that time. And then afterwards, in 10 and 11, it's about patience in the face of suffering. When things happen in your life, you need to be patient, just like Job was patient when he was suffering. Just like Job and the other prophets, we are reminded that Job's perseverance and what the Lord brought about, that the Lord is good to those who are patient, full of compassion and mercy. So this verse is not just about complaining in general, but it is surrounded by verses talking about patience. And James is connecting this patience with grumbling. Because when we lack patience, what do we find ourselves doing sometimes? Grumbling, don't we? When we're impatient, we think, oh, I wish this would happen sooner, right? Our impatience leads to complaining, and it shows, and even worse, it shows that we're doubting God's plan at all. If we're complaining about impatience or being impatient, We think, hey, God's not working things out the way that he should. God's not in control of our steps. God's not in control of my life. And we complain because we are impatient with God or even with others sometimes. We complain and grumble because we lack patience. We want God to speed it up. Do it faster. We're not trusting God to work everything out in his own timing. And I think that's some of the reasons why we find ourselves complaining in our lives. At least the first reason, because I think we think God's not moving fast enough. We think maybe our plans are better, right? We rush things that God is using us and growing us in. He says, hey, growing is a process. This last week, we're thinking about our garden. Carrie is kind of getting up in the garden. I think we're not going to be, I mean, spring's coming, the snow's now melted, and the plants are starting to grow, but we're going to put that off. And she got her, these little kits, and we're going to start from seeds this year, she says. So we got to be patient, right? Patient for things to grow. It doesn't sprout overnight. And so sometimes we complain about things like that. We're not waiting for things. We're not waiting for God to move in our lives. We say things like, why are there not more people here? Or why is our church like it is? Or why is these things happening in our lives? Why hasn't God answered our prayers about this or that? See, God is working. God is moving. We might not see it sometimes. We might not understand it sometimes, but God is working out his plans. Just like it talks about here, being persevering, that God is full of compassion. He's going to bring about these ideas in our lives. And we need not look to our own plans and grumble because they take a little bit longer than we want to. We need to trust God that he knows what he's doing, and that's all in his timing, and his timing is the best. So I think that's the first thing that we see. But as I looked around the Bible, there are other examples of people who grumbled and complained in the Bible. And in the Old Testament, especially in the Old Testament, we see some grumbling and complaining of the children of Israel, right? And this shows us a lack of stuff. Because the second reason people complain and grumble is because they lack things, or they're lacking stuff in their lives. They want more. I see this in the story of Exodus chapter 16. Remember that story? No sooner did God deliver the children of Israel out of Egypt, they're just got past the Red Sea, where God parted the waters of the Red Sea. They walked through on dry ground. The Egyptians come falling after them, and God crashes the seas down on them, wipes out the army. They have no chance of following the children of Israel. They're free from their slavery. And a month later, it says this. In the desert, the whole community grumbled against Moses and Aaron. The Israelites said to them, if only we had died at the Lord's hand in Egypt. There we sat around pots of meat and ate all the food we wanted. We were slaves, but that's beside the point. But you have brought us into this desert to starve us to death. Grumbling, weren't they? Less than a month after this miraculous deliverance, a month after all these plagues that came upon the Egyptians, and the Israelites saw them, the plagues, and they turn around and say, hey, look, we're out of food. What are we going to do? And they started grumbling. They had forgotten. They had forgotten where they came from. They had forgotten that they were slaves. Yes, they had food in their stomachs, but they were slaves, and God had set them free. But God takes their complaints and actually answers them at this time. He says, okay, I understand this, so I'm going to send manna and send some manna in the morning and quail at night is what the talks about there in chapter 16. And every morning you're going to be able to have manna on the ground and quail at night to eat. And God answers them. But it says later on that they start complaining even more, and they get to the point where God says, okay, I'm going to give you so much quail that it's going to come out of your ears, out of your nostrils, and you'll loathe it, it says in Exodus, in Numbers 11. It says, you're going to loathe it. Because you have rejected what the Lord has done among you. But they complained because they did not have stuff. They didn't have the food that they needed. And Exodus chapter 16 goes into Exodus chapter 17, which talks about their complaining about water then. They get to the point where they're out of water. And so God provides for them from water from a rock, you know, right? They were not trusting God to provide for them. They doubted God's provision for them. They were not trusting God to provide water for them or food for them. They doubted God's power. So they complained about it because they didn't have the stuff that they thought they needed. But then we get to another story later on. A year later, they're still complaining, you know, and they get to the edge of the promised land, and Numbers, it talks about how, Numbers 13 talks about how God brings them to the edge of the promised land, and Moses sends spies into the land. He sends 12 guys up there, and they explore the land, and they come back and say, hey, you know, the promised land is great, but there's a giants there. There's people who are going to conquer us, and we're not going to win. We're not going to get one. And so 10 spies said that the people of the land were just too powerful, while 2 spies, Caleb and Joshua, had the faith that God would just provide for them and open the gates for them, would overthrow the giants. And after that, it says that these people complained again. It says that all night, the people of the community raised their voices and wept out loud. The Israelites grumbled against Moses and Aaron, and the whole assembly said to them, if only we had died in Egypt or in this desert, why is the Lord bringing us to this land only to let us fall by the sword? Our wives and children will be taken as plunder. Wouldn't it be better for us to go back to Egypt? They said to each other, why should we choose a leader to go back to Egypt? Again, they complained. It sounds familiar, right? The same complaint as a year before. How wonderful Egypt was. How wonderful slavery was. And yet, again, Joshua and Caleb try to stop this grumbling by saying, hey, guys, we can do this. God is on our side. God is with us, and we can go and conquer these guys. But these people complained and grumbled. And eventually God says, okay, because of all this grumbling and complaining, I've had enough of it. You're not going to enter the promised land now. 40 years you're going to wander in the desert. 40 years before God would open that door again. All because they did not trust God to provide for them, to give them the stuff that they were looking for. And if you think it's just a problem in the Old Testament, look at what Paul says in the New Testament, in 1 Corinthians chapter 10. You know, Paul is using these stories that we just read about and looked at, about eating the spiritual manna and drinking the water from the rock. And he says in verse 7, he says, now these things occurred as an example to keep us from setting our hearts on evil things as they did, on things, on the things like that. So Paul goes on and said, hey, after this verse, he says, hey, do not be like these people in the Old Testament. You know, they were idolaters and sexually immoral people, and they tested the Lord, or as this comparable, as this portion of Scripture concludes, and they grumbled. And do not grumble as some of them did, and were killed by the destroying angel. He says, hey, the things I see in the Old Testament, I see in your church as well, Corinthians. He saw grumbling and complaining, and they were just as harmful as idolatry and sexual immorality. So Paul says, look back at what happened when they grumbled. Look back at what happened when they complained against God. They were killed and destroyed. They perished in their sins. So he says, don't grumble. Don't complain like they did. He says later on in Philippians, he urges the people, do not complain or do everything without complaining or arguing. He says, I want you guys not to be complaining, grumbling against each other. And we even have an example in the Gospels where Jesus tells a parable about people who grumbled. Matthew 20 is another great example where Jesus tells a parable of a landowner who goes out to the marketplace and he needs to hire people to come to his vineyard to pick grapes. And so he goes out at 6 a.m. and he hires a bunch of guys and says, hey, come work for me and I'll give you a denarius, a day's wages. You know, that's what a denarius was, a typical payment for a day's wage. And so they say, okay, sure, we'll pay, if you pay us a denarius, if you pay us for a day's work, we'll work for you. And so they go to work. But that's not enough. So at 9 a.m., he goes out, the owner goes out and finds a few more people. And they say, hey, go and plant in my garden. I'll give you what you deserve at the end. And at 9 a.m. he did that. He did that also at noon. He also did it at 3 o'clock. He hired more people at those times. And finally, at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, just an hour before the day's work would be done, he hired some more. But when they got done at 6 a.m., or 6 p.m., I should say, when they got done with their work and time for the payment to come, he said to those who were hired at 5 o'clock, here's a denarius. And he gave them a full day's wage, pages, for 1 hour. And so these guys that got there at 6 a.m. thought, well, if they got a denarius for 1 hour, we probably should get more, right? We should get more stuff. And then, so they came back and they grumbled. They expected to receive more, it says in Matthew chapter 20, verse 10. They expected to receive more, but each of them received a denarius. And when they received it, they began to grumble against the landowner. These men who were hired last worked for 1 hour, they said, and you have made them equal to us, who bore the burden of the work of the day in the heat of the sun. I mean, they were complaining. Hey, pay up. We want more stuff. They got paid what they agreed to, though, at the beginning. They got paid that denarius. That's what they agreed to right at the beginning of the day. But they wanted more. They didn't want to be equal to those that got paid, that did less work. They lacked stuff, and so they complained. What happens, though, to us in our lives when we don't get what we think we deserve, though? Yeah, I do it myself. I find myself complaining and grumbling. Hey, God, this isn't fair. I don't want it this way. Why didn't I get something that they didn't? How unfair is that? Something else that happens at our house, too, is sometimes our boys will, during the day when they're not supposed to, get into the kitchen and find their sweet treat of some kind, a dessert of some kind. And so they get in there and they think they sneak it by, and then we get to supper time and we have the dessert after supper time. We always try to give them a kind of a sweet treat at the end of the supper times. They're one real treat of the day. And sometimes we say, hey, sorry, you're not getting a dessert tonight. And they, why? Well, didn't you eat those cookies this afternoon? Didn't you grab that snack over there when you shouldn't have? And we say, hey, don't grumble. Don't complain. You had your dessert when you got it. They got stuff. And talk about grumbling from both sides. We sometimes grumble to them. Why did you eat that one for that? You should have. It's all about stuff. We don't get what we want and we think we deserve, and so we complain and argue. Why? God's in control. God provides for us, doesn't he? God promised to provide for us. And when we think we don't get what we think we need, we grumble against God. God, why haven't you given me this so far? Why haven't you given me this or that? We need to be patient, like at the first point, but we also need to trust God that he'll provide for us, that he'll give us what we need. He'll give us the stuff if only we trust in him. But there's a third reason why we sometimes grumble as well, and that's because we lack satisfaction. And in some senses, it's a combination, really, of the first two. But it also has an aspect of its own, because satisfaction is a sense of well-being, a sense that we're taken care of, right? It has to do with contentment and our attitude toward what we already have, whereas the lack of stuff is what we don't have already. And as I looked at the scriptures, I found another spot where it talks about grumbling and this lack of satisfaction. And it's a story from John chapter 6. Now, John chapter 6 is a story that first of all tells of the feeding of the 5,000. Jesus goes out and sees 5,000 people, well, 5,000 men, but there's other people as well, 5,000 men, and Jesus miraculously feeds all these people, sends out the bread. They have their full, they have extra baskets full, and then he sends them away with full stomachs. Okay, he says, okay, it's nighttime, you guys go away, I'm going to go up to the mountain to pray. He sends his disciples across the lake. It happens during that night that they come into a storm across that lake there, and Jesus comes and walks on the water. That's the story there in John 6. That doesn't have to do anything to do with our story, but they get it across the lake. But the people who were fed by the 5,000, those 5,000 people, hey, where's Jesus at? And they look for him. They went around the lake and they found Jesus. And said, hey, Jesus, we found you. And Jesus tells them, hey, I know why you're here. You're here to get your bellies full. You're not here to find a miraculous person or not find the Christ. You're not here looking for him. You're ready to get your stomachs full again, right? You're looking for me not because you saw a miraculous sign, but because you ate the loaves and had your fill, he says. But he wanted them to see him as the Christ, who he was. They were only looking out for stuff. They were not satisfied with what they had already. They wanted more. So Jesus points to the same Old Testament we've already looked at, back in Exodus chapter 16, and says, hey, the people grumbled about food back then, and God provided the manna. Well, here I am. I am the manna of God. I'm the bread of life, he says here. This is John chapter 6, where we talked last year about I ams, and he says this is the great I am statement. I am the bread of life, a direct reference to Exodus chapter 16. And this is one of the clearest cases where Jesus says, hey, I am God. I'm the Christ. I'm the one God sent from heaven, and you need to listen. I'm the one that's coming. I'm doing his will. And it says, when he says this, at this the Jews began to grumble about him because he said, I am the bread that came down from heaven. They began to grumble. They were not satisfied with what they had. They're not satisfied with who even Christ was. They were more concerned about their belly. They were doubting God's providence. Not just his provision, but his providence as well. That God wanted to give them something to save their souls. Something that they would save them from their sins. I am the bread of life. I've come that you might have your full of me spiritually. He wanted to give them spiritual food, and they were content with physical food, weren't they? They were worried about what they would put in their mouths instead of what they would put in their hearts. Right? Their hearts were not complete, and they were not satisfied until Jesus would come a part of them. You've heard the saying that there's a God-shaped void in the heart of everyone, right? And I believe that's really true. That there's a void, there's a lacking in everyone's life that don't know Jesus, that doesn't know about God. And they're not going to be satisfied with the things of life. They're not satisfied. They're lacking satisfaction, and so they grumble. They say, hey, I want to find some satisfaction, some meaning in this. And so they strive after this point and they don't find meaning there. If I don't find meaning there, maybe I'll find satisfaction and meaning in my life in this. And it's not God. And it just doesn't satisfy. And so they complain and grumble. Why are things going wrong? What's going on? But they're lacking this void. They're looking for satisfaction. They're looking for God in all the wrong places. They have this longing, this need. Their spirit groans in them. It says, hey, there has to be something more. There has to be something greater. But what is it? We know what the answer is, don't we? We hear that, know that without God, the satisfaction in the world is not going to take place. That grumbling will take place until they satisfy that need that will satisfy the hunger in their souls, not just in their bellies. So we need to give them the bread that will feed their soul, to tell others about Jesus, to let them know that this is the only thing that will satisfy them. I love that song that's on the radio many times, that we're just beggars telling others where to find bread. We are just like beggars at the feet of Jesus telling others that we found the true meaning of life. And so we come back to our conclusion, back to our first verse that we talked about in James chapter 9. Do not grumble with one another. How important this is for the church to remember. Because grumbling comes from three things that show us our lack of trust in God's plan. Shows his lack of trust in his provision and lack of promise in his provision or providence as well. We grumble because of our lack of patience with God. We are, and in that case, we're showing that we're doubting who God is and his plans for our life. And when we grumble against our lack of stuff, we're trusting that God's not going to provide for us, right? And when we grumble because of our lack of satisfaction, we're saying that God doesn't really care for us. God's providence, his care for us, is not true. And so I think grumbling is one of those sins that we just need to get rid of in our lives. One of those things we need to just say, God, I'm going to trust you in your plan. And so my grumbling is going to cease. God, I'm going to trust what you are going to provide for me, for stuff, for what you think I'd need in my life, and I'm going to trust you for that. So I'm not going to grumble for that. And for satisfaction, Lord, I'm just going to put my satisfaction in you because I know you love me and care for me and going to take care of my needs. Grumbling is just so insatious. It's that judge that's going to come and say, hey, it's so bad. It's going to be judged severely because it's just not trusting in who God is and what he's gotten for us. So don't doubt God. Trust him. And then we'll be able to grow together as a body of believers.